Platoon F, Liberating the Package, by John P. Logsdon and Christopher P. Young. Copyright John P. Logsdon and Christopher P. Young. Narrated by John P. Logsdon. Produced by Living Audio. Once you enter the universe of Platoon F, your life will never be the same again. Chapter 1. Orders. Ensign Orion Murphy had his whole life ahead of him, or so he thought. He'd just been selected by Rear Admiral Parfait to run an undercover mission. While he had no idea precisely what the mission entailed, he didn't expect it would be all that wonderful considering that the upper echelons of the military brass had come up with it.
"The Rear Admiral will see you now, Ensign," said a young man who acted as Parfait's secretary.
Murphy entered the office and came to full attention, including the required Segnal Space Marine Corps salute that consisted of having the right arm bent, with the hand flat out, thumb tucked under, and the first finger touching the forehead over the right eye. It was much better than the Segnal Space Navy salute, which prescribed that both hands be placed over the eyes while the thumbs were looped at the jaw, and then the soldier would lift their hands three times in a peekaboo fashion while making a bloop bloop sound. It had something to do with making one look like a fish, and that made no sense since there weren't any fish in space. The Rear Admiral sat at his desk clicking away. Based on the reflection coming from the back window, Murphy assumed that he was looking at anatomy photos of some sort, though he couldn't imagine why. They weren't in a medical unit after all. Parfait was an elderly man with a thick mane of white hair, squinty gray eyes, and a thin face. He was roughly as tall as Murphy, who came in at slightly over 6 feet, though his record listed him as 6 feet 2 inches. Parfait wasn't exactly imposing, but he was the brass, and that meant that he held Murphy's fate in his hands.
"At ease, Murphy," Parfait said as he closed his computer down.
Murphy dropped the salute and crossed his hands behind his back.
"It's been a little over a year since you left advanced training, no?" asked Parfait.
"Yes, sir." Parfait nodded and got that faraway look that spelled he was about to say something inappropriate.
"I remember my days in advanced training, challenging obstacle courses, long runs, late nights, men stuffed in barracks that were far too confining, their sweaty bodies entwined."
"Sir?"
"Hmm?"
"You called me in to discuss orders."
"Oh, yes, of course."
Parfait stood up and walked over to the wall where a large screen was encased in a plastic frame. He tapped it and it lit up, showing the picture of a shirtless man on the beach. Parfait turned a nice shade of red.
"Oh, how'd that get there?"
He quickly clicked it away.
"Guessing that the younger staff are playing a joke, eh?"
"As you say, sir."
"Right. Well, let me pull up your mission details."
The screen flickered momentarily and then revealed a map of planets that sat outside the rail system.
"Are you familiar with Lopso 2?
"No, sir."
"It's a small planet that lies about 1 light-year away from the Kortnor."
"The Kortnor? You mean the robot planet, sir?"
"That's the one, Ensign."
Parfait tapped the screen again and it zoomed in.
"There's a package on Lopso 2 that I need you to retrieve."
"Yes, sir," Murphy said, and then added,
"How, sir?" "You'll take the rails to the Chaffian hub, and there you'll pair up with a couple of Kortnor robots who will shuttle you the rest of the way."
Murphy nodded.
"When you arrive, you'll have to sneak in, take the package, and get back here safely."
"Oh, it's a theft, sir."
"They stole it from me. I mean, us."
"I see, sir."
"Look, this is going to be a dangerous mission, Murphy," Parfait noted as he shut the screen back down. "If you're captured, we'll disavow our involvement, and they'll probably shoot you."
"I understand," Murphy said stoically while the Rear Admiral returned to his desk.
"May I ask what's in the package, sir?"
"Highly classified," Murphy said in a stern voice. "Do not open that package under any circumstances. Are we clear?"
"Yes, sir." Parfait relaxed slightly.
"Now, sorry to get all riled up, Ensign. It's just that the contents of this package could well do me, I mean us, in the SSMC, incredible harm."
"I shall keep it under wraps, sir."
"You know, Murphy," Parfait said slowly, "you remind me of one of my crewmates when I was younger. Strong, virile, muscular, tight clothing that accentuates every—"
"Sir?"
"Hmm?" Oh, right. Sorry, memories of my youth, you know. Why, only 2 days ago, I was speaking with Admiral Blandish about how we used to bunk together, and let me tell you—
Sorry to interrupt, sir, Murphy said quickly, again jolting Parfait from his digression. But when will I be leaving?
Oh, Parfait said, looking down at his watch. You should get down to Launch Station 41 now, actually. They're waiting for you.
Murphy wanted to sigh, but he held himself in check. Thank you, sir.
Dismissed.
Chapter 2. The Rails. The transport ship wasn't much to look at, but most of the newer ships weren't. They all had that stark white or sleek silver coloring that spelled functionality. He recalled seeing videos of the 25th anniversary running of the SSMC Reluctant. It was an archaic piece of junk by today's standards, but there was something about that ship that rang true. It was a real ship. It had parts and pieces, and even an engine. Originally, anyway. The engineers had been instructed to remove all fuel-blasting rockets due to pollution and the greenhouse effect that was reported many years back. This meant that all ships were now run via magnetic propulsion via rails. Yes, rails. It was probably the stupidest thing that any spacefaring society could have conceived, and it was a wonder that it worked at all. But that was the way of things on a planet like Segnal. Other alien species who had come to trade with Segnal made many derogatory remarks regarding the rails, and quite a few of them even broke trade agreements due to the idiocy of it all. But the Segnalian Environmental Society would not budge. Murphy stepped up to the door where a lieutenant stood. He saluted at her, but she didn't even bother to look up.
You, Murphy?
Yes, ma'am.
Cut the formality. No time for it. Get in and I'll get this damn thing launched.
Yes, ma'am.
He stepped inside to find a number of other soldiers already seated. There was only one spot left, and it was next to an overweight commander who appeared to be taking up half of the remaining chair.
May I sit here, sir? Murphy said with a salute.
Unless you'd rather stand, Ensign, the commander said. I don't see as you'd have much choice.
No, sir.
Murphy squeezed in, and the shuttle began to move. The familiar clink-clank could be heard just under the level of the discussions going on around him. The Segnalian engineers had included the sound effect because it seemingly relaxed travelers. Other than that, there was no actual purpose to it. To Murphy, it made it feel as though he were traveling on a train in space. With the rails, that was actually somewhat accurate.
Going on a holiday, Ensign?
Asked the chubby commander.
No, sir. I'm on a mission, sir.
Oh? Well, what kind of mission?
Classified, sir.
I'm a commander, Ensign.
Murphy glanced at the stripes on the man's arms.
Yes, sir?
That means that I have security clearance.
Ah, right, Murphy said. This order comes from the Rear Admiral's office, though, and he specifically informed me that nobody was to know about the details of my mission, sir.
Oh, I see,
the commander said, grabbing a package of peanuts from the seat-back pouch in front of him.
Must be something good.
I'm not at liberty to say, sir.
Oh, come on, Ensign. You can at least tell me if it's an exciting mission or not, right?
Okay, I suppose you could say it has the potential to be exciting, sir.
Huh, very diplomatic answer.
The commander cracked open a soda.
Want some?
No, thank you, sir. I'm watching my calories.
Same here, said the commander. I hate it, too. Do you know that they've threatened to demote me due to my inability to finish the SSMC standard obstacle course in under 3 minutes?
He took a sip of soda.
Idiocy, I say. What does it matter if a man in my position is incapable of climbing over a wall or crawling under some stupid logs? I give orders to people like you to do that sort of thing.
Yes, sir.
They're sending me to a fat camp,
the man said with a grunt.
Can you believe that? A few of my colleagues ended up in one of those places and they said it ain't pretty. They wake you up before dawn, make you do exercises half the day, feed you food that's made for rabbits, and make you watch videos about how eating poorly negatively affects your health, and you're not even given popcorn while watching those stupid videos.
Oh, sounds dreadful, sir.
Exactly,
the commander agreed.
So it would be nice to at least know that someone out there is having a good time while I'm imprisoned in a cakeless society for the next 3 months.
Murphy said nothing, but he supposed it couldn't really hurt to tell the man that his mission was likely to be exciting. The truth was that Murphy did feel that this was going to be an adventure. At first, he assumed he was simply playing the role of courier, but when Parfait explained that Murphy really had to steal the package, he couldn't help but feel a sense of thrill. He would be like that undercover spy from the movies, Shane Bland, 00719. Maybe he would even get to meet a lady or two and seduce her.
though he somewhat doubted that would happen.
"Well, you never know what can happen on a top-secret mission, sir," Murphy said finally.
"Yeah, that's true. Maybe you'll have to shoot somebody or something."
Shots could be fired, sir," Murphy said, keeping as vague as possible.
"Hey, maybe you'll even get to meet the girl like in Shane Bland 00719.
"Not sure if there will be any girls there or not, sir," Murphy admitted. "But if there are, I shall endeavor to, get one."
The commander leaned back, making the chair groan slightly. He had the look of a man who had been given something to dream about while facing his own personal nightmare. Murphy hadn't given anything away of use, of course. Frankly, Murphy could have been describing participating in the paint pellet gun event on Bozgan, except for the part about the girls, anyway.
"Now arriving at the Chaffian Hub," the computer chimed.
"This is my stop," Murphy said as he stood and grabbed his small duffel bag.
"Well, good luck to you, Ensign,"
the commander said with a nod.
"You too, sir."
"I don't think I'm going to need luck where I'm going. I'll need food."
Chapter 3. Bring on the Clowns. Murphy was the only soldier to exit at the Chaffian Hub. Actually, it appeared as if he were the only soldier at the Chaffian Hub. There was a civilian guard kicked back with her feet up on a white plastic desk, her hat pulled down over her face. She was snoring. Other than that, he was alone. Every 30 seconds or so, a computerized voice announced the time over the intercom. According to Murphy's watch, the computer was off by a few hours. He was about to approach the guard desk when his eye caught sight of a flashlight down one of the corridors. It was blinking in a controlled manner, indicating that there was some form of intelligence controlling it. Two short blinks, one long, three short, two long, and then it repeated. He'd seen the code before while in advanced training. The code meant, "Yo, come here." It was military, so he felt inexplicably safe in obeying it. Murphy glanced once more at the guard and decided to let her sleep. He couldn't quite blame her, seeing as the place must have been the worst assignment ever. She had to have done something to piss off her bosses back on Segnal. The hallway was tight and the ceiling dropped to a point where he could reach up and touch it. It was dark except for the blinking light, which continued its rhythmic pulsing. At the other end of the flashlight stood a robot, standard Cortnor model best as Murphy could tell. "Ensign Orion Murphy reporting as ordered."
"Robot Chug flickering the flashlight as ordered."
"Right, you can stop now." Chug stopped. "I thought there were supposed to be two of you."
"There is only one of me,"
Chug replied. "No, I mean that the Cortnor were supposed to provide two robots to assist me."
"Ah, yes. You mean Plika," Chug said. "She's waiting in the ship. She's our pilot."
"Good."
Chug continued standing there looking at Murphy. The light was too dim to get a solid look at the robot, but it was obvious that he was about Murphy's height and build. At first, he thought that Chug merely had an elongated head, but as Murphy's eyes continued to adjust, he noticed that what he was actually seeing was a top hat. Murphy assumed that there was some reason for the delay, and so he had waited patiently. But after a few minutes, he was getting the feeling that Chug was actually waiting on him.
Are you waiting on me for something?"
"Your orders."
"Right. Oh, take me to your ship."
Aye, sir."
Chug spun around and started clomping down the hallway.
"Follow me."
Murphy was shocked that the guard could sleep through the sound of this robot's footfalls. One thing was for certain. There was no way this amount of noise was going to allow Murphy to break in and swipe a package from anywhere. They'd be caught within the first 10 steps.
"Can you possibly walk any quieter?" he asked as this section of the hallway brightened considerably.
"Not with these things on,"
Chug replied as he kept clambering along. Murphy grimaced and looked down at the robot's feet. They were big and floppy, and if he wasn't seeing things, they were also painted red and white. They matched the top hat, which had turned out to be painted similarly.
"Chug, are you wearing clown shoes?"
Yeah,
Chug replied, as if Murphy wasn't all that bright.
"Kind of goes with the territory."
"Can you take them off, please?"
Chug stopped and looked back at Murphy, putting his hands on his hips.
"Are you suggesting that I not be myself?"
"Yourself?"
"I'm a clown."
"Oh, I thought you were a robot."
"Well, yeah, that too. But I was created to be a clown."
Murphy wasn't sure how to respond to this. He was already feeling a bit of nerves doing this mission at all. The last thing he needed was to have to deal with odd robots.
"Well, you are military, right?"
as far as you know.
And you don't think it's wise to walk softly?
Soldiers aren't made to think,
Chug answered evenly.
We're made to follow orders.
Right. They went through a few different passageways until they finally reached a doorway that held a flight of stairs. They walked down what felt like 20 levels until Chug opened a side door. A Kortnor shuttle was docked barely inside of the force field that kept the vacuum of space at bay. The ship itself wasn't much to look at. Even the Segnal space shuttle that he had taken here had more pizzazz, and that was saying something. Chug keyed the door panel and it slid open. He moved to the side and saluted as Murphy ducked and walked in. Once inside, Murphy was able to stand at full height. Everything was white, the walls, the floor, and even the ceiling. It felt like a padded room. Of course, seeing that he was on a mission concocted by Parfait, a padded room was fitting. He turned back to see that Chug was still standing outside the door holding a salute. What are you doing?
Regulations require that I not drop my salute until you salute back.
Murphy saluted and told Chug to get inside. Look, Chug, I'm not one of those by-the-book types of soldiers, so let's just skip all this constant saluting and such, okay?
Nope.
Why not?
Not in my programming,
Chug said with a shrug. Unreal, Murphy said irritably. Can you at least do a little thinking on your own?
Okie dokie.
Murphy stared at him for a few moments. Chug didn't seem to mind. Okay, where's the bridge?
Through that door, Chug said, pointing.
Murphy started walking but looked back to see that Chug was still standing where he'd left him. He sighed and shook his head. Chug?
Yep.
Are you coming?
I'm not even breathing heavy.
What? Said Murphy, feeling confused. And then the joke hit him. Wow, never thought I'd meet a clown robot who makes dirty jokes.
Another part of my programming, sir.
Super. Murphy stepped onto the bridge. There was more of the same white that was in the rest of the ship, but at least there was also a wide screen where he could see outside. One would imagine that would help with claustrophobia, and one would be right as long as there were planets or stations within close proximity. Otherwise, the vast emptiness of space could feel crushing indeed. The pilot's chair was empty. His first thought was that the pilot was in the latrine, but robots didn't need to void themselves. Unless these were a new model of robot that Murphy had never heard of. He wouldn't be surprised, especially considering that Chug was the first clown robot that he'd ever heard of. Plika? He called out. A creaking sound came from his right, and he turned to see another robot was standing there. This one was wearing a rainbow-colored wig and had a big red nose. She honked a horn twice with her one hand as the other started flying towards Murphy with haste. Murphy furrowed his brow as his brain tried to process exactly what the hell was going on. By the time he'd sorted it all out, it was too late. He'd been hit directly in the face. The world went black. Then he sighed heavily, wiped his eyes, and licked his lips. Lemon meringue? He asked. Replied Plika in her own way. Wonderful. Chapter 4. The Plan. Look, Murphy said as he paced back and forth in front of the two robots. I'm not saying that you can't be who you are. I'm simply explaining that you're not the ideal, well, soldiers for this kind of mission.
Then why did your boss specifically ask for us? Said Chug.
Plika honked a horn twice to signal her agreement with Chug's question. I don't know. Murphy stopped and looked at Chug. Wait, Rear Admiral Parfait specifically asked for you?
Yep.
I don't understand that at all. There must have been something more about this mission that he had yet to learn. Maybe they were going to a convention of some sort, or possibly a children's party. Yes, that had to be it. These two were going to be posing as some form of entertainment while Murphy set about sneaking into the back rooms to find that package. The clowns were a diversion. I think I get it, Murphy said finally. Actually, I'm kind of surprised at the forethought of the Rear Admiral. He's not exactly known for this sort of thing. To be fair, Murphy hadn't really known the man all that well, other than their brief exchanges that often consisted of the Rear Admiral requesting that they exchange their briefs. Parfait was just another member of the brass. This got Murphy thinking even more. A Rear Admiral wouldn't share a lot of details with him, but maybe he would with the Kortnor. Do you have a copy of the orders from the Rear Admiral?
Don't think so,
Chug said. Right, Murphy said, pinching the bridge of his nose as he sat down near the wall. He dug into his duffel bag and pulled out his data pad. After keying in his password, verifying his thumbprint, and going through the obligatory eye scan, the screen opened up and revealed a video of Parfait speaking his orders. Murphy had watched it a few times already, of course, but it was difficult to catch details from Parfait's orders because the man was the king of disturbing revelations. This time, Murphy was going to pay special attention to every word. He gulped and then clicked play.
"Does my hair look okay?"
Parfait asked while seated at his desk.
"Yes, sir,"
answered the person behind the camera. Murphy assumed it was Parfait's secretary.
"And my uniform?"
"Perfect, sir."
Parfait sat up straight.
"These orders are for Ensign Orion Murphy's eyes only. If you are not Ensign Orion Murphy, I command that you close this down immediately."
Murphy shook his head in the same way that he'd done the first three times he'd watched this.
"Good. Now, Murphy, your mission is to go to Lopso 2 and liberate the package from the home of Mr. Ivan Avakov. You'll recognize him straight away. He's tall and lean with a neatly trimmed beard and steely blue eyes. He has money, too, loads of it."
Parfait suddenly looked glassy-eyed.
"He'll likely be wearing a tight suit that will hug every bulge, too," he added wistfully.
"Sir?"
the secretary said, jolting Parfait from his fantasy.
"Hmm? Oh, right."
Parfait squared his shoulders again.
"Anyway, Murphy, you'll have to arrive precisely on the day of Ivan's birthday, or this'll never work."
Murphy shut off the recording and nodded. So that was the reason that Parfait had requested these two bozos. Why this Ivan Avakov fellow, who supposedly had loads of money, would want a clown show for his birthday was beyond Murphy. But if it provided enough of a diversion to allow safe passage for liberating this package, Murphy wouldn't complain.
"How long of a show do you two have?" he asked Chug.
"What?"
"I'm assuming you've worked up an actual show, right? A clown show?"
Chug glanced over at Plika.
"Oh, right. Sure, we have a show. Why, it's the greatest show that's ever been."
"Great," said Murphy. "How long is it?"
"We're still talking about the show, right?"
Murphy ignored Chug's attempt at humor. "Yes, we're still talking about the show."
Well, let's see," Chug said slowly. "If we had brought our robotic lions with us, it would have been a solid hour. But we were told we couldn't do that. We also had to leave our unicycles at home, which is a shame because Plika here can jump through a hoop of fire while pedaling one of those." "And that reminds me," Chug continued. "We were told we had to leave the flaming hoops behind also."
He turned towards Plika.
"Did you bring the ribbons and confetti?"
She honked sadly.
"Dang,"
said Chug, dropping his shoulders.
"Well, that just means we only have a few jokes."
"I'm assuming they're dirty ones."
"Is there really a point in having any others?"
Murphy didn't answer.
"Anyway, that leaves us about 5 minutes of material."
"What, that's it? 5 minutes? That's barely any time at all."
"Not much I can do about it, pal,"
Chug replied defensively.
"I'm the only one capable of telling jokes here, unless you know a few."
"I don't."
"See? And Plika can only honk." "I didn't mean it in a bad way, Plika."
"5 minutes isn't enough time."
"I suppose we could do that, sure. It's been a while, though."
"What? What did she suggest?"
"Dancing."
"Clowns dancing?"
"What's wrong with clowns dancing?"
Nothing. It's just, I mean, never mind. How long is your dance routine?"
"About 10 minutes, give or take."
"So," Murphy mused as he stood back up, "that would give me roughly 15 minutes to sneak through the house, snag the package, and slip back to the ship."
"Yep."
"Well, it's not great, but it'll have to do."